Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics, from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
What's the deal, my brother?
My guy, what's the word, baby?
Ain't nothing, man. I'm on my 25th hour right now, man. I'm grinding it out, man. See, I got my big going crazy. Like,
hey, it's like that sometimes, you know. Hey, no rest for the blessed. That's a
fact. What's going on with you?
Man, you know me, daddy daycare over here. I had mom's the nanny over here, so we chilling.
Okay. I just wanted to tap in with you, man. Everybody, you should know who Ross Mack is. Mackonomics, EYL alumni, has a show on Revolt. Dope commentary when it comes to the economy. Used to work on Wall Street. Yeah, very interesting young man. So you will be joining us for our Market Monday show in Chicago, because you are a Chicagoan as well.
That's right? Gonna be right, man. It's gonna be historic, man. Monumental.
Native Chi-Town representative. So make sure you get your tickets. The link is pinned. But I just wanted to wrap with you for a few minutes before our show on Sunday, just to talk about a few topics, man. It's a lot going on in the world. And I know you're an economist. So I want to get your opinion from the economy standpoint. I'm going to start with the number one topic, Israel, Palestine. You don't have to give me your political views, but I'm interested to hear your economic views on this situation. Did you see Biden's press conference just now?
You know what's crazy? I caught the tail end of it, but I saw, because, you know, I got a few updates and stuff like that. But I see he's saying, you know, immediately he want to go before Congress. He want to get money for Israel as well as Ukraine. So, you know, my overall view with those things is, at the end of the day, war is always bad. Geopolitical tensions are always bad for the stock market, for the overall economy, right? And I think, obviously, when he goes before Congress and he's asking for more money, that's just a function of saying the U.S. debt is only continuing to grow. We had like $33 trillion. Like 10 years ago, it was like $10 trillion. You know what I mean? So the idea of like 3Xing over the past 10 years is crazy, and that's just going to have a ripple effect for the years to come on whether that's the tax rate or what, you know, other different rates in general might be. So at the end of the day, I think, you know, war is never good unless you own, you know, some of those, you know, defense sector names, et cetera, oil names, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that I think the politicians haven't fully, I don't think they have a good feel of the temperature and the climate. Just from the post, like we've been posting about just news topics, and, I think there's a very anti-war sentiment, at least our followers.
Yeah.
Right? It's very anti-war sentiment, and it's a very anti give money to other countries sentiment that has been going on. And then, like, when I put the post up that $100 billion was requested, some people didn't believe it. They're like, no, you made a mistake. It's $100 million. Like, no, it's really $100 billion. So today he actually talked about that today, that he wants to, you know, get money for Ukraine and for Israel. And like I said, they're talking about $100 billion package. So what are your thoughts for when people, you know, a lot of people are concerned because they're like, okay, we have student loans. Mm-hmm. You denied student loan debt relief on a wide scale from the federal court situation. But now we can go into $100 billion to fund outside wars that the average person doesn't see any benefit in doing that. So what's your thoughts on that?
Nah, that's crazy. So I don't really go too heavy into politics, but I share the sentiment where a lot of people have to ask the question, like, where's this money going and what's the benefit, right? Like, the way that they're going to try to pull the wool over certain people's eyes is they're going to say, well, you know, we are trying to maintain, or I think they use the word, like, for national security, we need Ukraine not to be taken over, or we need Israel to this, that. And I think that national security, we don't really understand that. So the average person, I'm not even gonna say the average person, just anybody for the most part don't know what that means, right? I remember when Zelensky came before Congress, and at this moment we had gave Brodnim like $30 billion. And he like, yo, that's not enough. And we like, wait a minute, bro. Like, and so the average person is like, one, why do we have to always be the person to kind of interject and say, hey, let's take this side or that side? But there's so many other things that we need to do with that type of money. And for me, I don't think giving bread to none of them is the right answer. However, I'm not privy to the type of national security conversation that they might be having in our Oval Office.
So what are you investing in right now? I know you worked on Wall Street. And you have the series, and we talk to your children in the back of the car about investing in stocks and stuff like that. So what are some stocks, what are some ETFs, like what are you personally invested in, or what's on your watch list?
I love that. What's on the watch list? At the end of the day, you know, I rock with Ian Heavy. You always got to start off with the two indices, right? S&P and the NASDAQ. After that, it's heavy first in tech, you know, so you're always looking at the Apple, the Amazons, right? The Microsofts. I think I love the semiconductor sectors. I think I love infrastructure. I love healthcare. And at the end of the day, right, I think anytime where you're looking at certain names being down a ton, like I'm not touching the travel sector yet, but it's been down like 30% over the past 3 months. So you're looking at stuff like that, like, okay, it's now time. Like, well, Disney at crazy, you know, crazy discount in the 80s is now time. Maybe not yet, but like there's certain names that will always continue to be on a watch list, and you're trying to see is now the time to, you know, get into it. But I think the safest is always starting off with the indices. And from there, just trying to own the most powerful tech companies in general.
So let me ask you about this, another trending topic. Cardi B, I don't know if you saw this, but she has said that she would rather invest in Birkin bags because that's a better investment for her as opposed to real estate. And, you know, when I first saw the headline, I'm like, but she actually made a pretty compelling argument, I'll be honest with you. And anybody that has, you know, I recently just bought a home to personally live in it. It's not always cracked up to be, I'll be honest with you, especially when you're building a home. My advice to anybody is never build a home. Mm. If I had to do it over, probably one of the worst mistakes I've ever made in my life. So
where you building that?
In New York.
Okay.
So she made some valid points. She was talking about how a lot of her tenants have not paid, mm-hmm. all kinds of issues, property, the boiler breaks, all kinds of stuff, right? It's a hands-on situation. You could buy a stock and just not have anything to do with it at all. Right. If you're buying, you have hand, it's not, there's no such thing as passive income when it comes to real estate. I think that's a phrase that in real estate. So what's your thoughts on Cardi B saying that Birkin bags are a better investment than real estate?
So at the end of the day, right, you got to look at a Birkin bag and understand that that's a different asset class. So it's not apples to apples. You know what I mean? So if you look at a Birkin bag, if you look at Rolexes, if you look at wine, if you look at art, these are all different asset classes that, one, our people don't know nothing about. All we know about is whether it's real estate or stocks for the most part. And crazy enough, right, Rolexes have been doing better than the S&P over the past 5-10 years. And I got to look into Birkin bags, but they have been having a crazy...
They've been appreciating like 20-25% per year.
That's what I'm saying. They got a crazy IRR. I had a homegirl that worked at like a consignment store, and she was telling me, like, man, it's a way that you even gotta be able to get into these places to bid on the Birkin bag. So it's a whole different asset class and the access to it. So at the end of the day, right, like scarcity gives anything value, right? And so there's only a certain amount of land in the world, but you being in New York, you know, they just building on top of people. But I think that, you know, real estate, to your point, it's so many things that you can't control, right? The economy down or interest rates higher and you're trying to sell your crib. And then it's so many things, but I love it. Like at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with owning all type of different asset classes. Cause Birkins, you know, that ain't nothing that I know, but I know the Rolex market and I understand that they appreciate it. And it's heavy. And so at the end of the day, I think it's obviously some stuff you got to do, right, where it's like you can still live in this house and it's going to appreciate. You're going to have all these different tax strategies that you can leverage, right, and all type of other stuff you can leverage. Now, with a Birkin bag, I don't know if I buy a Birkin for 25 and I'm wearing it every day or if I'm a girl, I'm carrying it. I don't necessarily know if it's still going to hold that value. Now, if I'm buying a Birkin and I'm putting it in a case, and it's a crocodile, and it was 50 racks. I come back in 4 years. Now it's, they discontinued making this, so it was only, that might be different, but you know, I think I can wear my Rollie, long as it's in good condition, it'll still appreciate.
So let me ask you this, because you have a pathway that I didn't have. Like, you went to an Ivy League school. You actually went to one of the best universities in the world, Wharton School of Business, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like one of the top business schools in the world. And then you worked on Wall Street. So you have a very interesting pedigree. What was your experience as a Black man going to an Ivy League school first? And then what was your experience working on Wall Street, which is probably 98% white?
Hey, both of them, culture shocks. Especially like when you come from the inner cities. So I'm from Chicago, from the south side of Chicago. And going to the Ivy League, it was 6% Black. So instantly, I think, and I tell people this all the time, the greatest teacher is exposure.
6%?
Right? I remember the greatest teacher is exposure. It ain't, everybody think it's like experience. When they say, oh, don't touch the iron because it's hot, and you a little kid, they're going to say, you know, don't touch it, and you're not going to know it's hot until you truly touch it. That's cool if we're looking at it in a very small lens. The greatest teacher is exposure. And one of the things I remember as a shorty coming from the South Side is I was exposed to, you know, all right, it's other different races. It's, you know, it's very diverse, but it was a diverse way of thinking too, though, right? And so now you're in class with kids whose dads are CEOs or foreign dignitaries. Mom's rich as hell from Italy, you know, or all different cultures, right? And the crazy thing was how people, like, we have trunk parties. We go the way to school. It was a kid that I was in econ class with, and to this day, this changed my life because he was day trading in class. Asian kid day trading in econ class. This is in 2008. So the big recession, bro, day trading. And his graduation gift, his dad gifted him a portfolio, as opposed to, you know, the trunk party, a little money, and I'm going to buy a new computer without, like, bro. So just the way of thinking completely.
Are you saying a trunk party?
Y'all got them in New York?
I'm not familiar with a trunk. What is a trunk?
A trunk party in Chicago. Maybe that's a Chicago stuff. Sound off in the comments if you've heard a trunk party. Black people know what a trunk party is. It's literally they going away to college party, where, you know, you're getting your gifts or you're getting money. It's like the idea is like that, like a trunk is like a suitcase. You know what I mean? A trunk. So you put in your gifts. There we go. A few yes, sirs. But the reality is a trunk is they putting stuff in there which you're going to take with you to college.
Okay.
So it's pillows, sheets, whatever it is. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying
a
is
baby,
the coat.
Baby shower almost.
Damn near. Yeah. There we go. Send kids off to school with a trunk full of stuff they're going to need. And so that ain't no way that's just Chicago, G. I got
party. I never heard of a trunk party before. It's a good idea. It's a good idea. I'm not familiar with a trunk
party. It's definitely evolved where it ain't no actual trunk, but I could imagine back in the day it was a true trunk. But a trunk, just a hardcover suitcase. You know what I mean? But the crazy thing is, like, the cultures are so different, though, where, you know what I mean, you going to school and you know what you're going for. You're groomed at a young age where it's like, you know, I came back to the city, right? One, the access to, you know, having the Wall Street firms on the Ivy League campus recruiting for their jobs, whereas some of my peers I went to high school with and some of the homies, they coming back and they just bragging on how many girls they may have had. And they just chilling in Chicago, where the culture where I was at Penn, everybody was trying to get an internship or trying to, you know, pad their resume so that they can go to the respective careers that their moms and dads already was putting them on that path to. And so at the end of the day, exposure is crazy because it's just going to help you understand the world from different lenses. And it's going to expose you to different ways people are making money, right? Like if you only from, you know, East New York, or you from Flatbush, and these are people in your hood, you're only going to know what the most successful person in that hood has done. I'm from South Shore, so whoever was, you know, we see the people make it out, oh, this athlete, or this type of person that's top D-boy. Just a few you know, you might see a doctor here and there, but now you're exposed to different levels of wealth, right? Like I thought I knew what rich was in high school, but college let me know what wealth was. And then working on Wall Street was crazy.
Before you go to Wall Street thing, I want to talk about that. You said something, you talked about your friend that was investing. He was the first person that you saw a day trading. So the crazy thing is, this was probably, it was the year that Donovan Mitchell got drafted. I forgot what year that was, but that was probably maybe like 20.
Spider?
Yeah. 2014 or something like that.
15.
Yeah, it was a while ago. But I know his family. I know Donovan Mitchell's family, right? So I went to it was in the garden. The draft that year was in Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. I was already a professional. I was already in my 20s working as a financial advisor. And I went to the draft, and he had a suite. His family had a suite in the draft. I think it might have been a Barclays. But regardless, we had a suite, right? So I was in the suite, and we have a mutual family friend where one of his family friends is a good friend of me and Troy as well. Mm-hmm. So their son went to, I think he went to Stanford. He went to one of the, no, he actually was high school. He went to like a private high school, right? It's a very good high school in New York. And I met one of his friends. So this kid was like 17 years old. I'm like 26, 25 years old. He's like 17 years old. And we was having a conversation, white kid. And he was telling me about Ethereum. He was the first person to ever tell me about Ethereum. There's this coin called Ethereum. He was explaining it to me. He was explaining to me how it worked. Because at the time, I heard of Bitcoin. But okay. He was telling me about Ethereum, and he was telling me how. Now, this is the part that's interesting. He's 17 years old, and he just graduated from high school. Right? Mm-hmm. So he was like, yeah, you know, my parents, they gave me $100,000 to invest. And he was like, I put the $100,000 into Ethereum, and turned the $100,000 into $1 million. And he was like, now I'm trying to start a hedge fund. Mm-hmm. 17 years old, right?
Think so about
that. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that conversation because that just put it in perspective for me.
Bro,
that put
come on.
Perspective for me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that put.
Mom, I never even heard of a hedge fund at 17, bro.
So there's so many different levels. So, A, the fact that at 17, he's even has enough awareness to even be interested in investing. That's one thing. 17, he's in a position to get $100,000 from his family to invest. Because if they give you $100,000 to invest, that means that they have, that's nothing. Like,
no.
That's the second thing. The third thing is that he has enough information to know what to invest in, right? And then the fourth thing is that he's aware that most 17-year-olds, you make $1 million when you're 17 years old, you're going crazy. He understands that that's just the beginning level, and he's already on to the next thing, talking about he wants to start a hedge fund.
Yeah.
So that just blew my mind. Like, and I actually invested in Ethereum shortly after he told me that. But that just blew my mind. That was like, I never had conversations like that with anybody in high school or anybody in life up until that point. And the first time I'm hearing about this is a 17-year-old. So it's like a lot of times, because I went to public school and private school. I went to public school my whole entire life, and I went to private school my last 2 years of high school. Mm-hmm. And the difference is like the wealth gap is so disturbing. For what I realized is that we don't even realize how far we are behind, because it's a very segregated country, right? You usually live in communities similar. Everybody's similar to yourself. Your circle is similar. So if you make $80,000 a year, you're communicating with people that make $80,000 a year or less, right? So all of your problems, issues, aspirations, you all kind of have the same. And you create your own algorithm, right? Mm. You create your own life algorithm where you're not aware of anything else, really. So 3 miles down the road, people that are making $10 million, $5 million, $8 million, you're not even aware that this situation is even really happening. You have no real inner workings of any of that, right? So it's like you don't even really realize how far you are behind because you never really get a real perspective of a different world until you're in that world. But most people never get an opportunity to even be in. So they're just consumed with the world that they're in. But like I said, you have an interesting perspective because you're in that world from an Ivy League perspective and then from a Wall Street. So now I would like to hear your perspective on Wall Street working as a young Black man, and what did that look like?
Bro, everything you said just hit home, because when we think about the wealth gap, it's only exacerbated by the exposure gap. Like you said, that kid had the information, not only just the capital, right? But he had the information, because it's some mogs in the hood that could get 100 racks easy, but they don't have the easy. A lot of them hit for about 20 to 40 on the PPP. So it's the same thing, right? The whole hood hit for the PPP. But the idea of actually now having the exposure to attaining that information, to now taking that capital to the next level. And so that's why I said, when I got in at my school, it was crazy, right? Because now I'm exposed to so many different avenues and thought processes when it came to attaining wealth. People that are running, you know, websites. I'm like, well, okay, people that are working on startups. This at 18, right? It's a different conversation when you're seeing people, you know, Asian kids that are coding and stuff. This, what the hell is that? You know what I mean? The coolest kids for us was guys who getting the girls, the athletes. You might be cool, you get a nice car, but now it's a different conversation. Guys are working on apps, etc. And so the crazy thing, when I got to Wall Street, it's like, oh, in my mind, I made it. I felt like an athlete. But I just realized that it was a small stepping stone to what else the world had to offer, because, you know, I got on the desk in 2012 at Morgan Stanley, and I was the first Black guy on this trading desk in the history. That's crazy, 2012. But the greatest thing, once again, about the
first Black person on Morgan Stanley's trading desk ever?
No. Hell no. On my particular desk. I was on the high yield desk.
Okay.
Yeah. On the high yield desk. There was other brothers on there, you know, one guy over there, IG, Munis, and one dude upstairs in rates. And but no, on my particular high yield, leveraged loans, distressed, I was the first. And working full-time. They might have had one that was an intern, but that wasn't, you know. But now to really talk about the exposure, because if anybody's ever been on a trading desk, you're side-by-side, back and back-to-back to people, and it's just long rows, and everybody got, you know, six computer screens or three to four, whatever, right? And the greatest thing was, one, the conversations that you're exposed to, right? You hear people talk about what they're investing in, and then things that you just see, where people checking their 401k. And I remember the first time I seen real bread was I'm walking down my aisle, and one of the MDs, he wasn't even a head on the desk. He was just a MD, a managing director. He checked his 401k. He had like 3 million in there. So he rebalancing stuff. And I'm sitting there like, what is that? And at that moment, you think about it, like the average person from the inner city, they won, right? People don't even understand benefits. So they don't know, like, okay, they don't even know what their 401k is being invested in. Half of them, it might be a target date fund. Some of them is getting a money market fund, which is cash equivalent. So your money really ain't growing. And so just the exposure made me want to yearn and learn more, because I'm like, bro, how fam got 2-3 million, and why is he rebalancing? So now I'm thinking about how he's doing that. Or I'm hearing these guys on the desk talk about, oh, I'm looking at this mining drilling company and yada yada, but like just the conversations, right? One guy telling me about why he got an LLC and how he's writing off his dry cleaning and all of his suits. I'm like, okay, so, but the exposure is just one at that level. And then I went to a fund when I moved back to Chicago, and the crazy thing is just being in, and obviously y'all doing it in front of the world by being on stage with the Robert Smiths and the Kathy Woods and the Novogratz, but like I was in meetings every day with hedge fund managers, portfolio managers, and people that ran hedge funds. And now you're just doing the backwards math of how much they're worth, and on top of that, how they think. And one of the dopest meetings I was in was with Ken Griffin. He's Citadel. He one of the richest dudes out here. He got to be over nine B's. But fam didn't blink, bro. And what was crazy to me was just how machine-like he was. Before there was AI that we knew
he didn't blink the whole meeting.
Fam, if you ever watch an interview of Ken Griffin, see how we talk, we blink as we, with our expressions, you can, one of the things I learned when I do public speaking, I count how many times people say, just randomly, I do that. I was trying to count how many times he blinked. Bro, don't blink. He a machine, bro. But going to that point, though, now, talking about exposure, now I was thinking about the different alternative methods of what people are investing in, right? So I remember having a meeting with a specialty finance company, and this was a true turning point, was they were invested. They own a portfolio of cash advance loan places. So when you sit there, one, it's a phenomenal investment if you're on the other side, right? Oh, it's uncorrelated to the market. It's in black and brown neighborhoods. They charging 500% return. I'm sorry, they charging 500% interest on the money. They borrowing at this and they doing it. So now you look and you say, bro, one, us as a community, we to pray, right? We're getting prayed on. And even more importantly, was like, wow, there's so many different investment strategies, right? I was sitting across from several portfolio managers for reinsurance, right? So to your point, when you talked about the Birkin bag, it's nothing wrong with having these uncorrelated investments, because it's people making millions of dollars purely buying the flood insurance and the hurricane insurance that you have through your insurance companies. And so I think at the end of the day, bro, exposure is something that before the power of social media, sometimes you just needed to be in those, you know, being at a white firm and a white school, you know, I didn't really get to pick and choose, kind of like social media, who you follow, because you're in the halls with these people every day. And it's I say I wouldn't be where I was. I wouldn't been investing in 2008 if it wasn't for sitting next to a guy. He had 25 racks. To your point, to your homie who got 100 racks, this Asian guy had got 25, and that's how he started investing with 25. And it's just different conversations that our community ain't privy to, and that's why it's important.
No, education is extremely important. You know, like, we come from working class neighborhood, and I'll never forget, like, first time we used to work at a community center at a camp, and when we got the first paycheck, everybody went to, it was a check cashing place, right next to a Chinese restaurant. And we went to the check cashing place, and say you got $200, and they give you like $190, and they cash a check for you, and nobody ever questioned it. But the crazy thing is that there was actually a bank probably 200 yards away from the check cashing place.
Exactly.
So easily could have opened a bank account, but nobody even thought about that. It was just like, yo, this is just this is how you get your money. When you get a check, you give it to them and they give you the money for the check. And it's predatory lending.
Bro.
And it is something that, like I said, I've never seen a check. Never see a check cashing place in a white neighborhood.
No.
Never.
Check cashing place right next to the liquor store.
I've never seen a check cashing place in a white neighborhood. I've never seen it before, ever in life. But these, once again, this goes back to education, like just being educated, right? And it's like so many things when you just look back on life, and it's like information is just everything, man. Because it's like these bits of information can literally life-changing. Like what you don't know going to keep you in the same position that you're in forever, for generations, right? And just learning something different can actually change your life, but now your whole family's trajectory going forward.
Yeah. Bro, like the idea of people should get mad at the fact that there's no currency exchange or cash advance, none of that in the white neighborhood, but it's going to be in the black and brown. Seldom will it be in the Asian or Indian neighborhood, me. But for the most part, bro, it's in our hoods. And imagine, bro, because now I'm in a position when I was at my shop. I'm in a position because I'm trying to look good. So I'm imagine saying, oh, this is a great investment. It's traditionally uncorrelated to the market. It's crazy returns. You know, these people are getting money and their return on the capital that they're either lending out or, you know, it's 200%, 300%, 400%, 500%. And so when you're sitting there looking at that, it's not until you like take the blinders off, you're like, wait a minute, gang. We at the dinner table, you know what I mean? And so to your point, like information not only could change your life and the trajectory of your family, but it's so important to understand what we consume. Because a lot of stuff be, you know, propaganda, et cetera. But it's important to understand what we're doing with our free time, because we get lost away on scrolling and following different things, or lost away on Netflix. Netflix crazy because they give you 5 seconds to say that you want to watch the next episode, and then it's just instantly on. And so you look up, you done binge 5 hours, and not understanding the world that's around us, that for the most part, we don't have a seat at the table. We not owning nothing. And so like going to that school, and that's something that I go back and forth with, because all my siblings for the most part went to HBCUs. And so I'll be thinking like, you know, would I want my kids to go to HBCU, or would I want them to be exposed to what I was exposed to? Or granted, because now I was exposed to, maybe they can go to an HBCU. Or so I kind of go back and forth. For the most part, I want them to go to kind of the route I went to. But like the conversations is different. Well, you know what I mean?
Well, let me ask you have kids, you have young children, right? So this is something that a lot of parents struggle with, especially like when you start. So the problem with when you start to make money as a Black person is that you're faced with some dilemmas. It's a very weird situation to have money as a Black person, because in most parts of the country, if you want to move to a really nice neighborhood, mm-hmm. be predominantly white. Mm-hmm. Well, that's an issue, because now you're the only Black person in the neighborhood, and that's weird. And then you have to send your kids to school with all white children, and especially when they're young. That's a very dangerous situation to put a child in, because mm-hmm. they're never going to be fully accepted as a white person because they're not white. And they're going to lose a level of cultural identity because they're never going to be able to fully identify with the vast majority of Black people because they become out of touch. So now they become kind of like, they walk a very thin line. I've noticed this with a lot of Black kids that grew up in white neighborhoods where they do like weird cultural, like they try to overdo it sometimes.
Yep.
Just try to just, it's a weird space. But then it's like, okay, do you put them in a Black environment, right? Problem with that, unfortunately, is that a lot of times the educational system or just the environment is not the greatest. But now when you put somebody who, it's obvious that the kid has a level of wealth, right? Or mm-hmm. the kid has advantages. So when you put, it's hard to be the richest kid.
Yeah.
It's hard to be the richest kid, right? Because now it's like there's a certain level of envy, jealousy, and there's just a certain level of just not at a certain point in time, you're not going to be able to relate. And that can cause issues, right? Because then do you start to do things to self-sabotage yourself to fit in with your friends who yeah. are at a poor socioeconomic environment, right? And that causes challenges for the growth of a child, because now they can potentially hurt their growth by trying to fit in a situation that they're not familiar with. Like they wasn't raised like that. They're not from that environment, but now they're trying to fit into that environment to make themselves comfortable with their friends. Very, very interesting dynamic that parents have to consider.
That's a fact.
What's best for your child, right? So what's your thoughts on that?
You know what's crazy? And because I went to school on the East Coast, I understand that dilemma is even harder for y'all, because for the most part, you asking the difference between private school and public school, right? PS and all the name of y'all schools got a number on it type shit. And Chicago, lucky enough, there are a few good enough public schools that are diverse, where you might have 25 this, 30 that, 20 this, 15 that, where it's like really diverse. And that was my experience in Chicago. And thanks to moms, because I didn't go to my neighborhood school. I went to a school I had to test in for elementary school. If I would have went to my neighborhood school, 100% black, 100% underfunded, right? But luckily, I went to a school where it was very diverse, had white friends. I don't remember him coming over to my house, but I went over to his. You know what I'm saying? And then the same with high school. I went to Whitney Young, same school Michelle Obama went to, and it's one of the more diverse. But I think that's a real crazy question, because even there, right, you kind of know who the rich kids' sons and daughters is. And I think to a level of comfort, you can ask yourself, right, because I got homies here that went to, you know, private schools, etc., and those where you're going to be one of only, one of a few on the black side. But I think that dilemma is way harder on the East Coast, because we got a few decent schools here that's on the public side, so you ain't got to pay no bread, and it's going to give your kid the ability to be able to almost be more chameleon-like, because at the end of the day, my kids will not be able to relate to my upbringing. They just won't. Now, they're not going to necessarily be able to relate to some of their white counterparts' upbringing either, especially if I move to a, like you say, a predominantly white neighborhood and we go to that neighborhood school. But to actually have that self-identity and ensure my kid don't have that imposter syndrome, I think it's important to, one, let them continue to know their cousins, let them continue to hoop in them tournaments, you know, in those basketball tournaments, and, you know, do those type of things. But I that's a crazy question, only because I know what you're thinking about, because like the people that live in New York, that's a big question. You got to pay 30, 40 racks to get a good school. Whereas here, you know, the politics, hopefully my kids make it into the school. If not, we're going to have to figure out who pawns we got to grease. But, you know, I think that, come on. Come on, that what's some famous people that was at Stanford, the actress that got into, I don't feel bad for, you know, she did the right thing. But I think that's a crazy thing though, because that identity crisis is real, and especially in Chicago, because what we see is perceived, or other many inner cities, is like, this don't make you black, because, you know what I'm saying, you drilling and all that, like, nah. So it's different elements that you definitely want to ensure that you, one, protect your kids from, two, getting them the best education. But like, I get what you're saying, and once again, I plan to live in the best neighborhoods. However, I want them to be in a position to go to a mixed school though.
Like, I'm very big on, I don't want to live in a white neighborhood. I would feel, I don't think I would feel comfortable. I do want to
get that.
I'm comfortable in a diverse community.
Yeah.
Diverse community. But there's not a lot of diverse communities. So there are diverse communities out there. You just have to seek it. But yeah, if you're fortunate enough to live like in PG County, that's a pretty affluent black suburb. And that's good. Or like Baldwin Hills in Los Angeles.
Yep.
In Atlanta. There's a lot of places in Atlanta, right, where you have like thriving black upper class. That's important, but unfortunately we don't have a lot of those communities in America. We have like pockets here and there,
yeah,
but there's not a lot of black thriving upper class. Nobody ever talks about that. We need a black upper class community.
Yeah,
we always try to say like, okay, the black middle class, but the black middle class has been stagnant for 70 years. We need more black upper class neighbors.
Yeah, and I think when you kind of, I took a psychology class and they was trying to talk about what the black elite upper class would look like. It's the parents that sending their daughters and having cotillions and or the Jack and Jills of the world. But to your point, like, where they all live. And like you say, PG County heavy. I went to school with a lot of them. Baldwin Hills. I had a classmate that was on that TV show. But yeah, like, you know, Chicago, I guess. Yeah, ours is more diverse. You know, if you live in,
Cause what's it like Bronzeville?
I was just about to say, you got Bronzeville, but it's still some elements there too, though.
It's
not unknown for Margs, you know, it's elements everywhere, you know, so it's those are the unfortunate realities. It'd be real shit going on.
Oh man, it's an interesting conversation. Like I said, this is stuff that, you know, unfortunately, like, you know, Black people, we gotta deal with so much stuff, man, that other people don't think about. Other people can just get money and just pay their taxes. That's all they gotta worry about, just paying their taxes. We gotta get money, think about how do we want our kids to grow up, how much exposure do we give them. We gotta think about, like, people that we know from the old neighborhood that still...
You got relatives that want a little bread.
Lingering street elements that still have some... You never really fully escape this situation if you're Black.
It's called survivor's remorse. And at the end of the day, what they say, birds of a feather flock together, but to a degree, you're going to feel a little bit guilty if the people that you've come up with, you guys, you know, go in different paths. However, once again, if information is the equalizer, I feel compelled at a minimum to try to give them the information that I have come across in my world that could hopefully help elevate them at a minimum, their kids. At a minimum, I want to make sure every one of the homies got life insurance at a minimum. Just at a minimum, why wouldn't we, right? Like, and so, you know, to that point, like you say, it's most white kids that I went to school with, they graduate. They're not thinking about having to start work right away because most of them, right? But once again, I went to a different type of school. They're not thinking about having to start, you know, work right away because, well, they might not have had to take out no student loans. They mom and dad might be able to pick up the phone to get them whatever type of job. So, right, they senior year might just been more lavish, or better yet, they might have said, you know, I want to go backpacking in Europe for a year and find my true passion. When it come to us, like, bro, the free, like, money gives freedom. It gives access to the stuff that other people don't have. And one of the greatest safety nets, or one of the greatest things I want to try to give my kids is that freedom. Because I said, bro, if Mark Zuckerberg's parents was broke, we would never have had Facebook. Think about that, bro. If you from the hood and you tell your mama, I'm in Harvard and I'm finna drop out because I want to work on an app, well, you don't come home. You know what I'm saying? Like the level of even trying to articulate that to your mom or your dad. Think about that, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so the idea, and, you know, people, they say, oh, well, such and such he only got that business because he got a loan from his parents. I mean, his parents did the right shit. Like, who wanted their kid to start off in square one? And so there's a level of freedom that I was damn near jealous of, because I'm, wow. How, fam, don't you just traveling the world? You ain't got no student loans. You ain't got no relative asking you for no bread. That's crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember when I started in New York, bro, I'm living in Harlem. I'm living with the other Black people, to your point, but I was trying to get the cheapest rent. My rent might have been $14.50 my first year in 2012. The people I'm working with, I'm asking them where they live. Oh, I'm in Cherry Hill. Everybody live damn near. I'm in Gramercy Park. Well, I'm in Harlem. I'm living in Brooklyn. Like, so, like, the idea of just stuff like that, like, they couldn't relate to that. Where's Harlem? Like, or, oh, wow, okay. Then to your point of the trying to be accepted, oh, I live on the Upper East Side. Then you say, oh, where? Oh, 125th or 190 is different.
All the way up Upper East.
Hit a little. Oh, just slightly north of the park. It hit different. hey, bro, that's some of the funniest shit.
Oh, man. Nah, man, this is real. It's real conversations. But look, man, Chicago, Chicago, we are coming. Ross Mack will be joining us on stage for Market Mondays Live. Chicago, you know, Market Mondays is a world tour. And it's 6 shows in 4 countries and 3 continents. So we did LA, we did 2 sold-out shows in Toronto, we did sold out show in London, Chicago, which is on its way to selling out. Get your tickets now. Click the link. We got to show. Chi-Town can't break the streak. We got to keep the streak going. And then we're going to end the year in Ghana. That's going to be big. We're going to end the year on the continent of Africa. And we're going to bring in a new year. It's like Belly, if he actually has to go to Africa. It's like the sequel of Belly.
That's going
to
be hard.
Yeah. So we're gonna be in Ghana. We're gonna be in Ghana for New Year's for Market Mondays. But it's been a great experience, man, just to be able to travel and just see different people in different regions. Everybody got different, aspirations, different goals. And I really like this thing that we've been able to put together. So thank you for rocking with us and joining us for this. Definitely looking forward to Chicago. Also, the last thing I think about this is that Chicago has a bad reputation. And I feel like even I tell people like, yeah, we're going to Chicago. The first thing they say to me is like, be safe. Oh, I ain't going out there. I rack to watch out. I'm like, yo, bro, it's not even like that. Like, I feel like if you looking for a problem or if you stupid and you go into a neighborhood that you know you shouldn't be in at 12 o'clock at night, then of course, but it's like, it has one of the greatest architectures I've ever seen as far as the city is concerned. The downtown architecture is beautiful. Even on the south side, he's on the south side. Cool, like it's no problem. Like I feel like it's important to change narratives.
Yeah,
that's important.
Look, man, Chicago voted one of the most beautiful cities in the world, not just America, in the world. And at the end of the day, summertime shy is second to none. And like you say, it's a culture. It's a city with extreme rich culture. Matter of fact, New York and Chicago, them black folks was coming up from Mississippi, up from, that Harlem Renaissance era, that they either went to Chicago and up to Detroit or over to New York. And at the end of the day, we got a lot of rich culture here, a lot of beautiful people here, a lot of great businesses, a lot of black dope-owned businesses. But at the end of the day, like you say, changing the narrative is important because, every city got the negative stuff, but for the most part, it'd be confined. And when it's all said and done, we're going to make history, man. Market Mondays, we're doing it here in Chicago. The best city is probably, maybe I'm biased, but I think this is going to be the best show ever. That's just how Chicago going to do. We're going to, everybody going to pull up, pop out. It's like that.
Nah, for sure. So shout out to my guy Dre in the comments too. I know he'll be in the building.
Absolutely.
NACA expert himself.
Hey, the NACA finesse kid. He one of them ones. That's my dog.
That's a fact, man. But yeah, shout out to Chicago, man. Can't wait to get out there. Always love whenever we touch the city. So thank in advance for the hospitality. Chicago has always been good to us.
And some of the best food in the country. Don't forget that.
And I'm
talking to a New Yorker and I'm talking crazy. Some of the best food in the country.
It's overrated. I'm gonna be honest with you. The deep dish pizza, I didn't enjoy that at all. That's overrated.
Listen, the dollar slices that once was in New York, they dry. You know what I'm saying? It's cardboard. It's like just putting cheese on a cardboard. I'm saying? Like at the end of the day, bro, New York is solid. I got a lot of love. I lived there for, a little over 3 years. And damn near more because I interned there for 3 summers too. So I rock with New York, but I fool. It's like that. It's like that. We got some of the top everything. And it's diverse, just like y'all. Like, we got crazy diversity too, though. Because you're going to get some. You can't get chicken in New York that's smacking like Harold's. It's just not possible. I've never had good fried chicken. And, you could go to, what's that on 116th?
Not Sylvia. Sylvia's on 124th, right?
Sylvia's and then the other one.
Amy Ruth.
Amy Ruth's like,
Amy Ruth.
It's cool. It's a real you know, Southern feel, but I'm just trying to get a five-piece hard, get some mild sauce, I'm going about my day. You know what I'm saying? So Chicago, one of them ones. We got way better steakhouses than y'all. Absolutely. It's not even a question. Yeah.
I don't know.
Is Ricardo's one of your top steakhouses?
I don't eat steak.
Okay. I want to know how you come it.
But you know, New York is actually known for steakhouses. You know that, right?
Nah, we known for that. We in the Midwest, bro. We had real slaughterhouses where, like, we had a whole section where we was the ones chopping the stuff and sending it out.
Okay. All right.
Gibson's is a chain. Whoever said that, they got that in New York and Chicago. We got stuff that ain't chains.
I'm interested in trying some restaurants while I'm out there.
Hey, we're going to show you a good time, man.
Asian Fusion, if you have one of those type of vibes going on.
You got that.
You know, I'm a
food. And not the chain?
I'm a
because everybody got towel. Yeah. We got other vibes.
I'm a food snob, so I'll definitely, you know, I wanted to have a food show.
It ain't too late.
It's not. It's really not. So maybe we'll do the pilot in Chicago.
It's like that. That'd be, I mean, what better place?
What better place? Well, there you have
we
it.
We got better Mexican food than y'all. Y'all gonna have us on some West Indian though. Y'all got us.
For sure.
Y'all gonna have us.
Mexican culture is not really huge in New York. It's
I know. That's why I had to say something that I knew I had a one up on.
It's more Dominican, definitely Jamaican, West Indian for sure.
Chicharrones. I lived in Spanish Harlem. I'm already knowing. Yeah.
All right. Battle of the food, man. Now I'm interested. We got to make reservations. Make some reservations for Saturday, shall we?
Let's do it.
Saturday night. We go make reservations. We bring the gang out. And I'm going to be the judge of this. I'm going to be the judge of this.
It's easy work, man. I mean, you don't come in just mad off the stress when you got to let us know, like, okay, that is better. As long as you know.
For sure. I'll be a fan.
Believe it.
The deep dish was so hyped up. And I felt, what did I eat? It was one of these famous places, too.
Giordano's.
That's downtown?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, like, it was either like Giordano's or
It's two famous places.
Oh, are you talking about Illuminati's?
Illuminati's.
Yeah.
I should have known by the name because it sounds like Illuminati. But I went to Illuminati, and they gave. I knew I was in trouble when they gave me a fork and a knife. I don't understand why they need a fork and a knife to eat pizza. It's
an experience.
It was dough with tomato sauce. A lot of dough with tomato sauce on it.
The cheese.
And they said, that's the best place to go.
Hey, but you want to know what's crazy, though? Chicago people really don't eat deep dish, though. Like, a New Yorker probably has never went and visited the Statue of Liberty. Like, we don't eat deep dish.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a outer towner thing. If you go in there and everybody, chances are 90% of the people in wherever you at, they from out of town.
What's the best restaurant in Chicago? I'm going to put you on the spot.
That's strong.
Your favorite. What's your favorite restaurant?
And I gotta ask the missus. Whole time though, Steak 48 a hit. I like. I'm a steak guy. I don't know. I ain't watched none of them like things on Netflix that was telling me why meat is bad for me. I haven't watched that, so I've been avoiding that. I probably should. But then you got Joe Stone Crab. What's another one? That might be it for now. I know some other ones though.
The one that we went to that time.
That was
we pulled up on the boat.
That's heavy. That's a crazy flex too. And Rashana, she had the pull up to the boat. It felt like we was about to go to La Marina. It might have been State 48.
Was it?
I think it was State 48. No. My bad. SDK. It might have been SDK.
It wasn't SDK.
It's on that block though.
It was
I think it was. I don't know no more. Let's see. Yeah, that was SDK. I knew I went to it.
Was it?
Yeah, it was SDK. Because I went there not that long. I went not that long after. It was SDK, but that was a flex. Oh, you got some great eats on the river too, though. You know what I'm saying? Man, you ain't really eating on the Hudson River like that. You can't. We got great spots on the Chicago River.
The boat was a vibe. That was a vibe. I was not expecting that. I was not expecting the boat ride in Chicago.
Yeah. I'm you know, that's just Chicago. And we talked about this, and I'll argue this down. Chicago skyline and Chicago summertime is a real argument to have when it comes to comparing it to New York. And I'll leave it at that.
Architecture, skyline is beautiful, for sure. The summertime is highly debatable. I haven't spent summers in Chicago, so I don't really know. But it's going to be difficult to beat New York summer, I'm going to be honest with you. That's going
to
be difficult.
I ain't going to lie to you. I used to tear New York summers down. Chicago summer is aesthetically more it's better. It's just hot and dry in New York. Like, I think, and everything is about perspective. So for me, the idea of taking the subway in the summertime used to just...
Oh, that's disgusting. That's disgusting.
But imagine in a suit going to work and you got to go on the subway. It's 15 degrees hotter.
No.
You got to say, excuse me, because it's a rat also waiting to get on the train.
The subway, excuse me. Disgusting. Like, you know, I used to work on Park Avenue. So I used to take the 6 train from Grand. It was, and that was only 2 stops, maybe.
4, 5, 6.
I only took it when it was extremely cold or if it was raining, because I would just walk.
Yeah.
Man, that has to be one of the worst experiences in life, is taking the subway during rush hour, because there's a million people on the cart and nobody's talking to anybody. Everybody's just like looking with their head down.
In their own world.
It's bad, bro. And it's
to the one person with skits that get on and everybody.
Act flips and all kinds of weird shit.
Yeah.
100 degrees when it's hot. It's bad. Subway system in New York is terrible. That needs to be revamped. They need to do a $100 billion subway renovation.
Literally.
I need a $100 billion subway renovation for New York.
Because it was crazy. Y'all did it with LaGuardia. Subways need to be next. That might take a long time and inconvenience a lot of people, but it's crazy. And that, I mean, think about it. Chicago, we on top, baby. The L system. You ain't got to go underground, baby. We straight here. Elevator train for the people that don't know. L train. Elevator trains.
L train. The L train it is. Well, you got...
I ain't took the train in a while.
You guys have a hell of a run when it comes to basketball players, for sure. That you have... You have had a good basketball run, and you legendary hip hop for sure.
Y'all done had y'all. Obviously, when it come to the hip hop, obviously y'all got the Yankees, and you know, Knicks ain't never did nothing in life, but Giants had a good run in this lifetime.
The Giants have won two Super Bowls for sure. The Bears, I don't think that they've won since '80s.
85. But we went in, what was that, 2016?
Yeah,
the Bears. What was that, 2006. 2000, damn. Yeah. But don't worry, I got a good feeling.
Oh, man. Well, Ross, always a pleasure, my brother. I will see you this weekend.
Already. I'll see you Saturday, boy. Same trip.
Chicago, get your tickets, everybody. Click the link. Ross Mack will be in the building. Rashawn Scott will be in the building. 19 Keys will be in the building. Ian Dunlap will be in the building. Myself and Troy. We got some good things that we got planned for the Midwest. So thank you guys. Ross, holler at you, bro.
My boy, love. Respect, baby.
All right, bro. Peace.